Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in to Tour Punisher. I'm Noah Dunham.
And I'm Ryan Soley.
And this week we have a great new episode for you. In fact, I think it's our second episode. Ryan, for anyone who hasn't listened to Tour Punisher, who just skipped over the first episode and was like, episode two, this looks cool. What is this show?
This is definitely the second episode, and this show is all about bands taking their life on the road and the horrific things that can happen, the hilarious things that can happen, and there's generally a lot of shit involved.
Yeah. Which our next guest will be able to speak to. We had a really great interview with Bim Ditson of the band And we learned he has a lot more else going on in his life.
The dude is a human Swiss Army knife, including the tweezers and the toothpick. He is fucking ran for mayor. He makes chainmail for a living. He invented Rigskit Ball, which hundreds of people do every summer. And he also is completely anti-corporate. In every way.
It was a really cool talk. We're really excited for you to hear more about Bim Ditson and the band and all the crap that happened to them on tour over the years. This is Tour Punisher. Stay tuned.
The last thing that I clearly remember is that Oliver was playing a really fun joke on everybody, where he would go into the bathroom and take the urinal cakes out of the urinals and slip them into your pocket while you weren't looking. this is like like 43 hours into ever being on tour.
Oh, man.
What I love is that you just broke your arm.
Yeah.
That's all that happened.
Yeah, totally.
You just broke your arm.
It just spiraled. I'll drink this.
Master cleanse.
Yeah,
sorry, that was a shit joke.
I like it.
Thanks,
it was,
man.
A shit joke.
Thanks.
Oh, welcome. You're in good company. So we're just gonna hang out for like an hour and talk about all the trials and tribulations and triumphs of touring, which I've never done. So I get to be like the guy who, you know, gets to play dumb and also in certain circumstances also be dumb for this show. And then, you know, Ryan,
the rest of us are dumb the whole time.
Yeah, the entire time. Yeah. Especially I pointed at you. I was like, specifically Ryan.
Uh-huh.
Super dumb.
Dude, you got to do it. You got to tour, man. It's always the best.
Uh-huh.
It's never bad ever.
I don't know. After that first episode that we recorded a little while ago, I wasn't super convinced. Although the camaraderie did sound pretty good.
You're never going to get as close
to anybody. Don't tell that to your wife.
I'm not. Oh, shit.
It's not published.
Backfired.
You're good. So, would you like to introduce our guest, Ryan Soley?
Sure.
Or maybe Ray would like to introduce our guest. Ray, do you want to introduce our guest?
Wait, yeah. No, I think I got it.
You got something?
All right. This is Bim Ditson. he made that Rigskit Ball thing happen, and he's in a band called And he sells chainmail, and he ran for mayor of Portland one time.
Are those all truths?
Those are all truths.
Okay, so you didn't pepper it with a lie. I really thought we were maybe playing three truths and a lie there for a second.
He does so many things that you had a hard time thinking of a bullshitty thing about him, like, no, oh, wait, no, he does that too.
No, I was doing bullshit stuff, but I actually did it, so it snuck into the lie part.
There you go. Yeah. It's all just one big flat.
If you do enough weird shit that's real, then, like, yeah, nobody can make up anything about
that's
you.
That's right.
Or you could just start making up lies and people will believe you.
Yeah.
There
you go. That's my next trick.
So, and Bim, I know that you're a bit of a staple of the Portland music scene. Right, you've been doing music in Portland for how long?
Oh, I don't know. I think 2008 or 9 would probably be the start point, you know.
And did you start right with And?
Yeah, we started in 2009, so pretty much right away. Yeah.
And who were the other players in that band?
Oh, it started with six of us, and so there's this guy named Tyler Keene who might come up today, who was in the band at the start and then ended up moving away, and we just sort of continued on with. He wrote half of the songs, and Nathan wrote half of the songs, and so we just kept going with Nate after that. But it's Nathan and me and this guy named Berg, who's really annoying, and Ryan and John.
If you can think of it, what is like a way that either a person or maybe somebody who's written about your guys' music, what's like the most like off they've been on describing it?
I don't know. I'll jump in at some point. I'll just blurt it out. But there's definitely been some. Yeah.
Hootie and the Blowfish.
Yeah.
We always get Mumford and Sons.
You guys do? The Builders do?
Mostly in Europe. Like
yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, it's always Mumford and Sons.
If you don't know what to do, if it's a banjo, it sounds like this.
I don't hear it.
You guys got like the more rowdy Decembrists for a while too.
Yeah,
a lot.
We
actually
got a couple like Decembrists with balls.
What, they said that?
Yeah. No.
Yeah, quite a bit.
Yeah.
God
damn it. Yeah. It's a sucky thing. It's a late. It's hard, I think, because like most people want to say, oh, I can categorize this, and then it can go in my brain somewhere.
Yeah, that's the thing.
It sounds
like
this.
If you're a person, you wanna compare it to something you know.
Yeah.
You know, so you're like, oh, it's kind of like a mix between these five bands.
I usually do food.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, you just do food because it hits like another. It hits like taste and smell instead of like sound. So you can't really like you can't be wrong, but you can only be right. Mm-hmm. You know, and so like if you just compare something to food.
Wait, like give me an example, like.
Let's do the Builders. I could probably do it with food. I could do Builders with food.
Okay.
But it'd be hard not to just use more alliteration like you guys do. You guys are like bacon and bread.
I like going with animals.
Yeah.
Like what's, and I like seeing a live band and like watching the band Man. I'm like, that's five cocaine monkeys.
Uh-huh.
Like,
I like that cocaine is an animal. You know?
Yeah, well, there's monkeys.
It's a type of monkey.
There's a type of monkey. It's endangered.
They live in Colombia.
They're actually more similar to
us. Killing them. They're killing each other, yeah.
But I will say this. There's an element to and, not to, like, butter your bread, that's really missing in a lot of whatever rock music or whatever. There's like an out of controlness.
Yeah,
there's like this like
yeah
thing. It's like a ball that's coming apart.
Totally.
I really really like that.
Thanks. Yeah. And that's I'm the one that tries to hold it together.
Yeah.
So you might be talking to the wrong person about the out of controlness, but I really love that about our band.
I think there's something subconscious when you're watching a band that doesn't quite know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And then you think, as an audience member, I could totally do this. And then you're like you're basically like weirdly like in the band. Like you're kind of like, oh, I could do this. I want to be a part of this.
Well, and that's what punk rock is about. And
totally.
That's what hip hop's about.
Totally.
You know, like that's what like emergent, like hugely powerful movements of music have always been about. It's that like it's letting folks in, not in a way of like degrading what you're doing to say like, oh, we're going to dumb this down,
right.
But in a way of being one of the people that you're letting in and just happening to be on stage doing it, you know,
totally.
And like that's why people, you know, kids like me, when I was like a little kid going to house shows in Eugene and seeing these punk bands that were terrible.
Totally.
It didn't matter because what they were saying by being terrible was it's not about being perfect. You
right.
know, and that made me go, oh, I'm going to buy a drum set, you know. So, yeah, I think that's important for it to not be just right, you know.
Portland has changed a lot, especially in the last 5 years. And in my opinion, there used to be a lot more places that you could play where you could be bad and do a show. And it was easy to get a show.
Totally, yeah.
And then you could learn to be good, and in the process get fans and friends to come out, and it was free and easy and whatever. And now it's like, okay, we got to try to get an opening spot at the Doug Fir or Mississippi Studios. I hope we can do that. And then that shows a lot of pressure, and it changes the whole thing.
No one will book you unless you have a draw or whatever at this point.
Yeah.
Right.
You can't just book a show at the Tonic Lounge and, you know, play for nobody over and over again.
I think you can again now.
Oh.
The Tonic, maybe.
They just
they reopened it.
They actually, when they reopened it, they put that on the design. I think you can again now. Tonic Lounge.
I just, this is such a, for anybody outside of Portland listening, I'm sorry. But
yeah, we might go down a big wormhole of Portland references and clubs that are dead.
If you just take like the hundreds of thousands of dollars that people have spent on remodeling the tonic for another idea and put that into anything worthwhile, the world would be so much of a better place. And just keep it the Tonic. It was fine.
It was exactly that.
It did its job. It did its job.
Yeah, I think, I mean, to get back though, I think you're right. Like the cutting your teeth period of being in a band is really important. And having that happen in that middle ground of like public, but for your friends kind of thing is really important too. Because you have like sort of a feedback period that happens when the people who are always going to love you for you can start to like gently react to what sucks that you're doing and what's good that you're doing in a way that isn't going to shatter you and make you not want to go on. You know?
Like there's that period. Totally. You need to hone your craft. It's like the same thing with stand-up comedians doing like open mics before they build their set and then they get shows. Like it seems like, in town you can't do that much anymore as a band.
And I would say that's like we could dig into the bigger picture of that, like, beyond music and beyond venue spaces. You could even look at that as like what's happening with organizational capacities for social movements having to lay out their complete vision from day one rather than having internal meetings with just the people who show up and then figure out exactly what they want to do and how they want to frame it. You know, like what we're really talking about is the forgiveness for mistakes, you know, and environments that can do that and can do that effectively. And the Dive Bar is a place that effectively did that for a long time in Portland for bands, you know? And so that's something to be missed. But I think it's something that might be even bigger than sort of like a music conversation. I think it's a huge conversation that we should have about, you know, like it's okay to suck at stuff. Like that's fine.
That's how you get
like,
better.
And in front of people too.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's okay, you know?
Yeah. So wait, so going back a little bit to like you were just talking about like, you know, a little bit of that breaking through of like, was there a moment, can you think of like a moment in which, you know, you guys were kind of doing the like, you know, playing at bars thing, kind of like you said, sharpening your teeth a little bit. Yeah. Can you think of a moment where you guys were like, oh, this is like something we've got something now. Like, oh, there's like strangers showing up at our shows like more than our friends are at this point. Like, did it ever get to that point for you guys? And like, you know, was that like when you guys decided, oh, we might actually be able to like take this on the road?
We took it on the road before we got to that point. and we, it was.
We all do. We all did.
Yeah. So, yeah. I don't know. I mean, that's a tough question because it's sort of like the thing about, at least how we operate, is that if our target is not a moving target, it's not a worthy target, you know? And so that's sort of like, it's like, I think there's been a bunch of those moments. And like maybe one, like an early moment would be when we were asked to play PDX Pop Now on like, you know, in a really good slot on Saturday night. I think it was in 2010 or 11. And that was like our first time playing for like, that was when it was, where was that place? It was like still over by the tracks, sort of where.
That weird like warehouse space.
But it was outside and it was facing, it was just a huge location. It was a really big year for them. So we just got super lucky playing for, you know, it probably was like 1,000 people there, you know. And for us, that was like insane. We had been playing to 20 people at Ellis Street, you know. And so. That was definitely like a big moment for us where it was just like, oh, this is like what we wanted. We didn't know this is what we wanted, but this is what we wanted. And then we played like shit and felt terrible.
That's how it goes.
Or we played good and we thought it sounded like shit because it was high
pressure.
That's
probably what it was.
Yeah. You know, like, yeah.
You always think that you are worse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Was there a, when you decided to go on tour, was that a moment of like, we've all got to hand our lives over to this completely, or is it a thing where we can kind of keep things together and go on tour a little bit and kind of gradually go into it?
Yeah, we've always played that half in, half out game, because Nathan's got a daughter that needs to have him around, you know. Mm-hmm. So for us, it's like we've always done absolutely as much as we can, and he's been awesome to like make stuff work, you know, and been able mm-hmm. to do that. But for us, we just sort of always knew that like that's going to put a pretty big limit on how much we can just like dive in and be subletting, you know.
So yeah.
Yeah, for us, it's always been broken up. So we'll do a lot of stuff where we, you know, try and get clever about it and break a tour in half and, you know, do things 10 days at a time or something, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think a little bit of that, too, is that, like, we're so good at shooting ourselves in the foot and, like, you know, standing for something and, like...
Yeah.
Like, I come from, like, such a starkly different kind of background than most folks that I know. And it's, like, it's all about, like... punk ethos that is respectable, that is, you know, like yeah. completely, you know, before everything came along and DIY was like a pop culture thing, you could say, like, that's where I come from, is like you actually do need to like do it mm-hmm. all yourself to be able to stand for it, and you need to look up the supply chain for anything you're selling or else you're a shill, and you know, like
right.
all that stuff. So for us, we definitely push ourselves in those ways. We find a way to screw ourselves over.
Yeah.
Even though we can't do it on tour as much as we'd like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was just going to say the spectrum between, like, what's a sellout and what's, like, where's your integrity? There's, like, a
yeah.
slider depending on how horrible the situation you are in.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, well, I'm at a hotel, and the only yeah. thing to eat is McDonald's or TGI Fridays.
Yeah.
Like,
and then the guy like sleeping in the dumpster outside the hotel is like, solo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I know. Hang your head in shame.
Yeah, totally.
Hey, man, two of us are sleeping on the floor in here, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. Sharing a room. Yeah.
It's not like the best. I listened to you guys I've listened a long time, and then I re-listened before doing this, and
yeah,
and the Braji.
Oh yeah, yeah. You like that?
And I listened to it like three times.
Tight, good.
And
thank
that
you.
That shit is. Can you
wait? Can you explain what this is?
Yeah,
Bim would be better at explaining about Braji. But I was like, this is. I love this fucking band because
yeah,
of this.
Thanks,
yeah.
man. I appreciate that. Yeah. So the Braji thing came about with, you know, I've been thinking a lot about like internet stuff and specific. I guess like. Hopefully by the time this comes out, people will recognize the phrase data politics. But that, like, that concept of the internet has become extremely consolidated, extremely commercial, extremely anti-arts, anti-independent, anti-all the things that it was supposed to be, you know, in my view of it. And part of that is sort of where it places bands and the position that it puts bands in because of its dominance and distribution of music. And because of the dominance of what I would consider faceless Walmart-esque companies like Spotify, you know, I have a lot of problems with how that's all come to be and how it exists today. So what we did with our album and what Braji is sort of me having done a ton of reading on all of those issues and sort of coming up with this half tongue in cheek concept of Braji, which is what we're naming the conscious entity of the internet, and that the internet is waking up and that we just don't know how to talk to it yet, and that it's super hungry for data and it's just feeding on all of us through all of these, like, you know, it's sort of like a Huxleyan idea. It's the like oppression by tantalizing our minds, you know.
Braji.
The band calls this entity Braji. An example of how Braji operates and affects us is streaming platforms. On these, artists have no choice over which advertisers or brands they are associated with, no influence over how any of it is priced, and almost no say over how their music is presented. Braji's platforms say, exposure helps artists grow so they can succeed later, elsewhere, maybe. This devalues music now, everywhere, definitely. Braji doesn't care how much music is worth. Brudgy only cares about increasing Brudgy's food source. Brudgy's streaming platforms have become so dominant that they are considered the inevitable future of the music industry. The more control Brudgy has over the menu, the worth, and the presentation of all music, the more Brudgy can manipulate it as a whole to fit Brudgy's goals. Brudgy used this process on every industry digitized so far. Music, journalism, literature, film, and others.
Wait, Brudgy?
Brudgy?
It's just a name. I mean, from what I got, it's just a name.
It's just a name.
It could have been Brenda.
It's not an acronym or anything.
No, it's just what we call that entity.
Just came up with a name that's not a name.
Yeah. Well, and Brudgy
like
actually
Alexa.
Does have... Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like... sounds like a name, but nobody's named that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alexa, get the fuck out of my house.
Stop spying on me.
Yeah, so basically, like, the Brudgy thing was sort of our attempt to do that thing I was just talking about, of like that, like we're always sort of finding ourselves looking into stuff and then having to take a stand or not be able to look ourselves in the mirror. And that's our thing with streaming, and we're not distributing the album through any of those streaming platforms, you know, and that's sort of a huge move for us because it really fucks us. Mm-hmm. Like it's become sort of impossible to put a record out without signing these contracts that are non-negotiable with these crazy companies that are so rich and all the bands are making nothing.
Right.
You know, and so for us, it's like, this was our stab back, you know, and so the only stuff that we're distributing is propaganda against the distributors.
And so Brudgy was on Spotify.
So that's what we delivered at Spotify was our huge statement on how bullshit Spotify is.
Oh, it was just like text, like you guys talking about it?
And because they're so faceless, everything's run by an algorithm.
Man,
they didn't even catch it. Yeah, exactly.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's so fucking...
Okay.
Is it still on?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to look it up.
And so if you are listening to this, listen to Andan's music. Not on Spotify.
Buy
the
records.
Yeah. Buy it at...
Well, you might get some streaming royalties from Brudgy.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping is that we get streaming royalties. And then I can...
Like if you want to fuck... Like, it doesn't even fuck them, though. It just helps you. Just put it on mute and just let it play on a loop overnight.
Yeah, you're helping
out the band.
Go to work and stream that shit all day.
If enough bands did that, it would fuck...
What I wanted to do was make my other plan before this... And since we didn't do it, I can talk about it because it would have been super illegal. But I wanted to hire, a web developer, an app developer person to build an app to steal people's IPs that had Spotify addresses, and anytime that they were inactive in using it for themselves, use it for listening to Portland bands. And then I wanted to just import a list of Portland bands and release dates and have it do peak plays during the peak amount of, you know, the times when those bands typically would actually have peak plays so that there's no spiking that would look abnormal. It just would look like Portland music has become unbelievably popular.
Right.
And the idea there would be that you could then seed for each of these releases, you get sort of a union of bands. So all these bands are, they're a part of it. And then they buy into the upfront costs of building this thing that can do this, that can steal people's phone or computer for Spotify and have it stream whatever we want. And then you just take turns making 10 grand at a time.
Didn't you have like another thing where you were going to upload your album, but each track would have like an advertisement on it?
Yeah.
Telling people to go to your website if they want to get the album.
Yeah. And we even recorded a bunch of those. I could probably send you those and you could pop them in here as ads.
That would be amazing.
Let's do that.
Yeah. We recorded a bunch of it. It's funny, man. There's like a whole one that's this whole news bit, and it's like a reporter, and the guy's like, for Song World International, I'm Ryan Wiggins.
And I'm Nathan Baumgartner. We've got Bim Ditson live on the scene. Bim, what can you tell me about the current situation with And?
Well, Nathan, it's not good.
We have unconfirmed reports that you guys are on the edge of...
Consider any reports you've heard confirmed. This is as dire a situation as I've ever seen. We've been at it for days, and there seems to be no end to these album downloads. We're stacked to the rafters, and they just keep coming. We need people going to andandandmusic.com.
We seem to have lost connection with Bim. In light of this tragedy, we're urging listeners to do their part by visiting andandandmusic.com and downloading their new album for free.
Tragedy indeed, Nathan. We'll continue to give updates on this story as it develops. Next, we take a deeper look at Brian Eno's left sock.
That's brilliant, man.
Well, I've been saying for years, because I grew up playing punk bands, too, believe it or not. And and I'm always like, you know how, like, you know, your dad or your grandpa used to be like, the kids these days, they're all fucked up and listening to crazy shit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, the kids these days are bullshit. Like, what they like is bullshit, and they're into selling out instantly, and there's no Fugazi.
Yeah.
Like, there's no band, and now I can say, like, oh, there is, and is this band, and.
Oh,
and they're
thanks.
Fucking, yeah. So I love that shit.
Yeah, and I mean, that's our big goal, too. It's like, we've always been focused on legacy, and we'll be upfront about that. Mm-hmm. Because being focused on legacy, what that's actually about is acting right today.
Right.
You know, and so for us, it's like, we'll act right. I don't care if we lose out on, like, whatever, like, portions of pennies this industry was going to offer us, you know?
Right.
Like, who cares?
Right.
Part of this whole, like, release thing in terms of, like, the internet stuff is, like, we deleted our Facebook, we deleted our YouTube, we're going after everything on YouTube that's copyright infringement. We're doing all of those things to try and create a world where we can control who distributes our art and what advertisers are associated with it. Because it's actually really hard to do that. Even so, not just not distributing, that's not enough. You have to go and do your own takedown orders and do your own all that stuff. And so with that, the sort of word of Braji and that whole, like, piece that we wrote, and that was mailed to all press outlets nationally. And when we were setting up the show with Doug Fir, that was part of the deal, was like, we're not gonna, if you have a promo budget that's going to Facebook, that's not happening with our show.
Right.
And so it's cool to see too that they are super down with that. They were
that's
like,
cool,
let's figure out another way. And we were able to work with X-Ray to take the money that would have gone to Facebook, give it to X-Ray, and then
and
do cool
radio.
Shit with X-Ray and
that's
have
cool.
it be radio and have it be localized and have it go back into a nonprofit that's gonna put money into mm-hmm. the hands of, you know, if it, like, basically that supply chain makes sense to me mm-hmm. of like, cool, that's something that everybody at X-Ray, I can go like, you're working on your cool thing, you're working on your cool thing. That's not true with YouTube, you know, it's not true with the other thing. So it's interesting to watch sort of like how it develops, as far as like, it's one thing to make a statement that's, you know, we put a lot of work into that Braji thing.
Braji.
Like, it's something that we spent a lot of time researching and writing. But that's just neat. The rest of it is what's really cool, is like how it actually affects us to stand by it, you know, and like what we're discovering we're doing is really cool. You know, it's really fun to like figure out what else, you know.
Hey everybody.
Hey, this is Bim from And. Are you sick and tired of our ads? Go to andandandmusic.com for a free download of our album. Listening closely may cause back pain from listeners shifting worldviews and blank staring. Some listeners may experience lack of luster, awkward pausing, and self-doubt. For more information about potential risks of listening, please visit andandandmusic.com.
Wait, I figured out the animal. It's a horse wearing sunglasses.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jesse's band is a flamingo wearing sunglasses.
All of yours are with sunglasses?
There's a theme I'm starting to just realize.
It's an old tradition on the podcast.
The second one.
Is the horse like hungover?
It's No,
you can't tell if it is or not. It's wearing sunglasses.
Exactly. it's got a tattoo. I don't know.
Yeah, it's got a sweet tattoo.
Yeah.
So I guess like we could just dive in. Like, what's the first time that you guys were like, cool, let's go play some other cities.
Yeah. So the first time is a doozy of a time. It's got plenty of great parts to it. We
it's always the first one, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, it really
the,
is.
It's always the worst yeah. tour has the funniest yeah. stories.
So the first one we were gonna go play in Boise, and I think there was like a show on the way and maybe a show on the way back. You know, it was just really, really straightforward. And the day before we left, I broke my left wrist.
Oh, fuck.
And so I went in and got a cast and a whole bunch of Vicodin. And I had a spica cast, which is the one that covers your thumb and not up your fingers, but like over your the last joint, your first joint of your finger. Is it the last or the first joint on your fingers?
That's a good question.
What is the?
I think this is the first.
Is the palm
the first?
The front first. Of your finger, or is the tip the front of your finger?
I don't know.
There's a magical device we could nope. use to look at it's this, but I choose no, to allowed. Let us wonder.
Yeah.
You know what? Fuck it. This is what the rest of the show's about.
Yeah. I want to get to the bottom. They call them fingers, but I've never seen them fing. Oh, there they go.
Fing.
Yeah. But
put a thing on it.
Are
make it longer.
Are you a dad too?
No. That's Otto. That's okay. a South. Or okay. not South. That's a Simpsons.
Yeah.
Thing.
Okay. Yeah.
Somebody will kill me for mixing up South Park and Simpsons.
Oh man, yeah. Futurama's got the thing longer. It's like the professor yeah. has the thing. He puts yeah. on his finger. This makes it longer. Thing longer.
Anyway, so I broke my wrist. I got a cast. The cast limited my thumb, so I couldn't use my thumb. And then it also went
or your
above
first
my
or last
elbow.
Knuckle.
Yeah, and it went above my elbow.
Did we mention that you play the drums?
Yeah, so
okay.
I don't know if we did.
But you play the drums.
Yeah, I play the drums. So I figured out that I could put a stick in the cast and awesome. Then tape it to my index finger. And since it was my left hand, it was okay because it's, you know, my left hand was doing a little less. And especially yeah. back then, it was doing much less. You know, like a lot of the parts were pretty straightforward stuff. So you're like, all right, cool. So I have this pink cast, and then the day before we leave, I get all set. My doctor tells me, just, you know, don't do anything with your arm for the next few weeks. So we go, and when we all meet up, we meet up at my house to leave, and Tyler, who was in the band then, had bought these sweatsuits, like gray sweatsuits from Target that were just the worst, like just the ugliest normal sweatsuit you could imagine. And he's like, let's wear these. It'll be funny. And so I put mine on. We get in the van. We go. Everybody else has theirs in their bag. We get on the road. We're like maybe an hour away. I realize that I left my regular clothes at home. So I just only have the sweatsuit. So I'm fully in on the sweatsuit concept. But the sweatsuit doesn't fit over. It's really like weird fitting on the cast because the cast is too big, you know. So I cut off the sleeves on the sweatsuit. So I have my sleeveless gray sweatsuit and my pink cast.
And of course he did.
We go and we play in Le Grand, and there's like nobody there, and it was fine, and we all got really wasted or whatever, you know, it's normal. We go over to where we're staying, and it's the friend of a trumpetist in the band we're touring with, and it's his uncle.
Oh.
And it's this like really, really, really weird guy. And so we go there, and he has this huge garage and a bunch of boats in the backyard, and he has like a he has at least like one dog that has like a disease where it looks like it's been abused, but he said it's a disease.
It's called abuse-ish.
No, he had an albino boxer, which typically, like, I think they commonly do have this like muscular thing that happens where they're. Anyway, it's not part of the story at all.
But paints a picture. Like, yeah. You're like, in this place. Yeah, dude's so weird. Weird dogs.
Yeah,
weird dogs.
He's got
boats.
A transparent dog.
Yeah,
he's got the bruises show really well
like
on.
You can see its veins through the albino albino hairless.
You can
right?
tell where he's been hitting it. Okay.
Yeah. You can tell where either the top or the bottom knuckle was choking.
Striking the
dog. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So anyway, we're at this guy's house, and we're staying there, and he wants to party because everybody who puts up bands expects that you're gonna fucking rage. So the we are hanging out and partying. I'm wearing the grays, and at some point I have my shirt off. And the uncle guy is like, wait, I got the perfect thing. And he goes into some like part of his garage where there's a whole bunch of tools and stuff, and he pulls out this like 1 foot by 1 foot quarter inch thick steel plate that has been laser cut a stencil of the Air Jordan shape, like the logo for Air Jordan. And then he pulled out some pink spray paint. So we spray paint that on the back of the grays. And so I have my pink cast and my sleeveless grays. And I'm wearing, like, dress shoes with buckles. Like, old, like, colonial-looking dress shoes. And so I got the thing on the back. So we go and party there, and it's all whatever. And then, oh, yeah, he had a motorcycle and, like, a Mustang he was working on in the garage. And at one point, he was, like, burning out the motorcycle, but then it caught, and he, like, almost ran somebody over in the garage. And the next morning, we couldn't find Ryan for, like, a long time. And then we found him in the boat, and he had just slept in the boat in the backyard in the rain all night.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, so we get to Boise, and it's our first time playing in Boise, and we're playing at Neuralux, which is awesome for, like, a first show, you know. And it seems like there's going to be, like, people there. The band we were playing with, like, had a good draw and stuff. So we're all excited. We show up, and on the way into Neuralux, there's, like, a regular, you know, normal, super wasted at 3 p.m. local outside drinking and smoking. And she sees me walking with my cast, and she goes, hey, come over here. I want to sign your cast. And I'm like, sure. I look weird. She gets to call me out. So I go over, and she starts writing on the cast, and I look down. Right as she's finishing, I realize what she's writing. It just says, fuck you.
Brutal.
And then I'm thinking, well, it's my first time, like, in Boise, you know, like, all right, cool. Like, that's, I guess, you know.
Is she friends
me.
With a guy who jumped out of the dumpster and called you a sellout?
Yeah, right? Totally.
they just really don't like you.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyway, we go. So that's. That's the introduction to Boise. And then we play our set. And I don't know if I remember playing the set or not. I think I don't remember, but I think I did remember after we played it. And now it's just so many years later that I don't remember. But I think we played okay. And then we had brought this guy named Oliver, who's a really good friend of ours. And he was the drummer in this band in Eugene that we were all friends with called the Rock and Roll Soldiers. And he came with us as our, like, quote-unquote tour manager for our first little jaunt, you know. But basically, he was just there to party, you know. And so after we play our set, the last thing that I clearly remember is that Oliver was playing a really fun joke on everybody where he would go into the bathroom and take the urinal cakes out of the urinals and slip them into your pocket while you weren't looking. And so,
God damn it.
Next thing I remember after remembering that joke is waking up the next day in the van with my grays and my awesome itchy cast and everything, and urinal cakes in my pockets.
Oh, God.
And then the guys, when I see the guys in the morning, they're like, dude, we couldn't find you last night. Apparently they 86 you from the bar because you were asleep wearing those grays with a cast that said, fuck you, and urinal cakes in your pocket.
Like, life turned you into a complete monster. Yeah.
This is like, like 43 hours into ever being on tour.
Oh, man.
What I love is that you just broke your arm.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all that happened.
Yeah,
you just,
totally. Yeah.
You just broke your arm.
It just spiraled.
And it spiraled into, like...
That's great. It's a domino effect of...
Yeah,
oh, just like fuck. Shitty things that happen.
It's classic. Yeah.
So, can I tell a short story about the first time we played Minneapolis?
Yeah.
Yep.
Basically, it was like 20 below, and it was our first tour, and we were in a minivan. The heat didn't work, or the heat barely works. We just had it on cranked, and we had shit in the. We'd take our gear out of the van. It was all, or the trailer was all frozen. It was like literally fucking crazy. We get to the club, and they're like, okay, this is the 400 Bar, which is like a legendary dive in Minneapolis, and it was a cool spot. We never had a good show there, but would have been.
Isn't that that song Closing Time written about that venue?
I didn't want to bring that up, but yes.
Oh, I was worried that I took that from you. I'm proud to bring it up.
Okay. You're the
I fucking love that song.
Well, it's like just
Semisonic.
A great it's a great band, so
Semisonic.
I was going to pretend that I didn't remember their name, but I totally remembered their name.
Oh,
Sim,
I was
I think they're
semi-automatic or something.
Yeah,
Sonic the Hedgehog.
Sonic the Hedgehog. Anyway, the guy's like, okay, you know, they come out. They're like, don't load into the back door. It's frozen shut. You got to load into the front. And so we're like, okay. So we play our show, and it's like we're the first band, and the band that's on after us is like, and we've driven so far to get there. We're so fucking tired and just don't want to be there because the band on us after us sounds like Hootie and the Blowfish or some shit. Yeah. It was a bad band. We just want to leave. They had paid us, and we just want to get the fuck out of here. And all of our gear was right by the back door. And I was like, and Harvey, our mandolin player, is like a really big dude, and he used to be even bigger. I was like, Harvey, why don't you give that door the old college try and see if you can unfreeze it, and then we can get the fuck out of here. And so he puts his shoulder into it, and you hear the snap, and the door, the back door of the club, just falls off of the brakes, snaps the hinges, and just falls out. And it's like 20 below zero outside.
It was dangling by one hinge, and it was all like pushed up against this like icy snow drift. Like, never close the bull again.
Never close. It'll never be closing time. and we get our gear out, and we're like not making eye contact with the guys in the club, trying to fit the door back into the door hole.
trying to pretend like it will ever lock again.
Yeah. Anyway,
that's classic.
That's Minneapolis.
We never heard back from them. We never got a bill or an email or anything.
Oh yeah, that's a good touring question. Is like, what was like the worst run-in that you had with like venue people of like them just being like, you will never play in this town again? Like, if you ever had that.
I don't know if we've had that on tour. We've had that in Portland. I mean, I think we got 86 from two out of our first three shows.
That's so awesome. What
Berg.
What led to that?
Berg.
What was the
fucking wild card.
What was there's one in every band. What and I
he would smash
kidding.
Stuff like he
like it, break clubs.
He would break stuff. Yeah, okay. And like he was not. There was no like. The thing was that what we were doing, we knew musically wasn't there yet, and I think we knew that in our hearts, you know. And Berg's solution was to, as a spectacle, get it there. Mm-hmm. To make up for that, you know, and like I think he was right to do that. Like,
fuck,
I think that was the right reaction, like just to be like, fuck this, I'm smashing this thing on that thing, you know,
because
that's more fun than just being like, oh, we're not good yet, you know. So yeah, it was that. And we've had, you know, probably more than a handful of sort of like bad situations with venues of us just wrecking the place, you know. Mm-hmm. And when it comes down to it, it's like, psh, joke's on them, they booked us, you know, like we didn't force our way in.
Do
here,
your research, you know?
Yeah.
Bitch.
Yeah, exactly.
Call, you
yeah.
didn't call my references, bitch.
Yeah, exactly, you know. So I don't ever feel bad for that kind of thing, because we're never hurting anybody, you know. Like, it's like, it's just people being like butthurt that something went different than they expected, you know.
Yeah, there's a I love the line of like just danger.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck is this band going to do?
Yeah.
Like one of my first shows, and still the best band I've ever opened for, was the Jesus Lizard, and they came to Alaska.
Yeah.
I had this punk band. We got to like be first of three, and I was like, holy fuck. And David Yao was literally just like climbing on people, taking their glasses off their faces and just breaking them. Like, fuck you. And I'm like, he's a fucking asshole. But at the same time, I'm like, that's so fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Like, that he doesn't give a fuck.
Well, and that's what people flock to, that, because people, you know, like, it's hard to, like, that's why people like to, like, alter their consciousness too. Is like, you have to, like, people, like, there's sort of a problem with whatever system runs our consciousness of ruts, you know. And that problem of ruts has a solution in psychedelia, has a solution in novelty, has a solution in music, has a solution in somebody breaking your glasses.
Totally.
You know, and like that, those solutions are really just about going like, now what?
Yeah.
You know? And like, and that, like that now what question is a really good one, and I think it helps people. And I think that's why people go to those shows, you know. I think that's what they
shakes
want.
You up a little bit.
Yeah, it's just to get out of that weird, like, you're just doing the thing where you're like, you're a cog in a thing, and you know, and everybody has to like work and stuff. And I think like the more that people end up having to do stuff, the more that they want somebody to like fuck their day up in a way.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
Like,
yeah.
This is an educational portion. We can get back to the thing we were tangenting about earlier, retangent. But I wanted to, you mentioned this, like, I think there's this misconception that a band wants to party all the fucking time, 24/7, and that, like, when you're on tour and you've just driven 12 hours and played your balls off and you haven't slept or eaten any good food, that, you know, you might want to actually sleep.
Yeah, totally.
And like, everybody who puts up bands is like, okay, we're, it's like 3 a.m. and they're like, now we're going to get the party rolling. And it's like, oh my God, I just want to fucking sleep.
Yeah. Like, I think the other thing with that too is like I've done a total 180 on that, where like I used to be wanting to rage every night, and now I'm like the least so out of our band, aside from maybe Nate, but even that, like, I'm really the one that's like, yeah, I'd like to run tomorrow morning. But, you know, so I think the thing about it too is that it's even more complicated than what you're saying. I think the ultimate having people crash at your house if they're on tour thing is having one room
that
can be the sleepy guys that they actually would be able to sleep in, and then have the other room be an either or up 100%, to the band. You 100%. Know, have the other, like, if that's possible, that's like always, that's
that
so
golden.
Great. Yeah.
That's the
good tip.
My favorite is this is rare, but when someone's just like, here's the keys to my house, I'm going to stay at my girlfriend's place. You guys you just help to
totally
make yourself a home.
Yeah.
And so you just have a whole house and you can just hang out with your dudes. You don't have to worry about meeting new people because you've done that all night, all night long.
So yeah, I love that too. That's
we do that with hotel rooms too. We'll get two, and one will be like the go to bed room.
Fucking sell out two hotel rooms. God,
hey, try it out here in this dumpster.
that reminds me of the time when I was given the keys to not my friend's house, but his friend. He's like, this is my buddy's house. He lives upstairs.
Yeah.
He won't be coming home tonight. He's staying at his girlfriend's. But you just crash on the couch in the living room and on the floor. And so I was on the couch. My buddy was on the floor in front of the couch. We're just, like, getting ready to go to sleep. And we hear the door open. And I kind of glance over the couch. And there's, like, a couple, the people that live there, in full make-out on each other. Like, where you can't even find the keys to open the door.
Yeah.
You're getting it on. Like, before you open the door, your already clothes are coming off.
It's like one of those races at the county fair where you tie the two legs together.
Exactly.
And that race ends in the bed.
It ends in the bed. And so we hear that. We were like, oh, shit. What do we do? Because like,
they didn't know you were there.
Because the back of the couch was aiming towards the thing. So they couldn't see over the couch. So, they couldn't see there was people there.
So they're going to just go to the couch and see you guys.
No. So we're like, oh, shit. Do we stop them? And then I kind of glance up again, and they were, like, naked. And I was like, now I can't, because if I do, then they'll be really embarrassed.
It's too late. You didn't say anything yet.
We just laid down, and the door to the bedroom was, like, just wide open right there as if nobody was home.
Yeah, yeah.
And just lights on, full headboard. Like, there was I distinctly remember there was, like, a cowboy hat on one of the bedposts that was just, like, going buck wild, and they were, like, athletes.
Yeah, and there was, like, Pepsi commercials between segments and
totally,
stuff.
Totally. And they wake up, and they come out in the living room, and they're both wearing, like, biking spandex. Like, I'm like, oh, my God, you guys.
That's classic.
And they're like, when did you guys get in? And I was like, yeah, late.
Ryan and Nick got stuck in one of those once on tour in L.A. We were staying with this band, and I won't say their name because I think they're total fucking tools.
What does it rhyme with? Tool?
I'm not going to think of a good rhyming thing. No, they were super sweet
Lumford
to us.
And
you know, like they were super well-meaning, but they were like really proud of this sponsorship they got from a jean company, and you know, like just not our crowd. But we were staying there, and they were just raging that night. And so Ryan and I think it was Ryan and Nathan went to sleep in this bedroom, and they just were on the floor there because that's where they were going to stay. You know, so they went to sleep, and then halfway through the night, you know, like all these LA guys were like all trying to hook up that night, and one of the dudes had, I don't know how he knew these people or whatever, but anyway, he ended up having a threesome in the bed that Ryan and Nate were sleeping like right next to while they were trying to sleep, but both those dudes were too awkward to get up, and so they just like waited through the whole like pretending to be asleep, just waiting for
God, it was a threesome.
Yeah.
Like that.
It's like the it's most like, awkward thing you could just. What, yeah.
Who the fuck? I guess it's less awkward.
Did
if
they
you don't
know?
Know
did they know that they were sleeping there?
Like my assumption was that everyone involved in the threesome was so focused on that idea that they just didn't realize there was dudes sleeping on the floor. Like that's sort of my hope.
Yeah, or that intoxicated.
Yeah, exactly.
Or it's
yeah.
like, oh, there's just yeah. dudes in there. Who cares?
Who cares? Yeah. This is
that's sort
fine.
Of what I'm gonna assume. Yeah, like that's
or creepier. They're like, there's people there. And
that's
we,
the
and
other thing,
it.
Though, because that's why the threesome detail yeah. matters, because it sort of pops it in. For, I don't know why, but it pops it into that world.
Yeah,
of
yeah.
Of like maybe they're also into like have
voyeurs.
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
that's definitely what was going on. Yeah.
Maybe that's why we got that show. Anyways, it was all a long.
It was a long time. those two guys, your bands, yeah. be the unwilling spectators.
Like, I really like to have those two dudes pretend to be asleep while we're doing something.
That is the
I'm
longest.
I'm gonna keep my jeans
yeah.
on too.
Yeah, you thought furries
fuck
were
these
weird.
Pucks.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't. It's like a double voyeur and a threesome. It's like yeah. it's like such a niche sex thing that like yeah. that's
well,
that's,
it's so niche that there's like
no
you,
other way to achieve it.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to do the long con with the
yeah,
band.
Yeah, totally.
No, you bros just sleep in here.
Yeah, like, yeah. Look, come on down to LA and play this show with us.
I've looked
It'll
on
be
the
great. You can
like,
crash with us. You can crash with us on the floor in Jason's room.
No, nobody's gonna come in there. Except for Jason.
Yeah. Don't come in here. Yeah, that yeah.
Yeah. That's great too. We were talking also on the way here. Sorry to out our conversation.
I told you that thing in confidence.
Blow it up.
No, what is it?
That I think the perception of people who have like a band going on tour, oh, it's just like the most sex is happening, and when in reality it is logistically impossible.
Yeah.
Even if you could, yeah. it's like so such a non-starter.
Yeah, yeah. It is funny that there. I mean, that's just like the. There's been a lot of myth spinning around bands over the last 60 years. You know,
right.
So like
for sure.
most of it is just made up by somebody who is trying to sell a copy of a record. You know,
totally.
Like. Not even the bands themselves, just by some person at a marketing thing at some label. That
my other favorite one is like,
you know,
just backstage, like green room hangouts. You know, people like, oh my god, I got to get backstage and
yeah.
hang out with the band, and like they're just gonna find a bunch of guys on their laptops.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
Yeah.
One of them's taking a nap.
Is this my tea?
Yeah,
is this my tea?
Yeah,
is this your tea?
My voice.
I thought we said chocolate covered raisins, not chocolate covered almonds.
And then somebody's like, hey, is it cool if like the three of us have sex back here? We
yeah.
our thing is that we have to have sex in front of
yeah.
five guys on their laptops.
Can two
yeah.
of you
we
go to sleep?
Yeah.
Can two of you go to sleep though?
Two of you pretend to sleep. You don't have to actually sleep. Just look like you're sleeping.
Yeah. Just no, we brought sleeping bags for you to use for this.
Yeah.
Actually, if you could use our sleeping bags, we
yeah,
would
we
really
need
prefer
the,
that,
we need
yeah.
these sleeping bags.
Yeah.
Like, we really like these ones.
No, just go ahead and use ours. I see that you have your own. Go ahead and use ours. I got a joke then.
Let's hit that. Yeah, great. Hit us with the joke before
yeah.
I ask my earnest question.
Yeah. There's three kinds of people in this world. Those that can count and those that can't.
That's good. Take that one to Clementine tonight, Ren.
My daughter wrote a joke. You want to hear it?
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Why did the pickle eat the poop?
Why?
Because it was allergic to pee.
It's all coming down.
Yeah, really.
It's all coming down.
Well, so my question is, you know, it's like we've heard about, like, we hear a lot about these stories of, like, you know, the uncomfortableness of touring, mm-hmm. you know, Ryan talking about how he can't get any sex, you know, your bandmates getting taken advantage of in
weird
sleep
or sex.
Group sex
yeah.
situations. Like, but, like, why is, like, a band, do you guys, like, keep going with touring? Like, is there something about it that you guys enjoy, or is it a necessity, or is it a want, or is it a mix of both?
I think that for us, we're still at a point where sort of the routing that we do there's so much opportunity for us to like do better in every city by doing what we're doing, you know, that's what it's all about. It's mm-hmm. just about that like incremental growth by just exerting effort, you know, mm-hmm. and that like that ties back to the stuff that we were touching on earlier. It's just, you know, it's like the sharpening the blade ideal, you know, and mm-hmm. so for us, it's just like, if you're a band that can tour, why wouldn't you, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
it's rewarding to like get better too, and to
yeah,
like
totally
put effort into a thing.
Yeah, and I mean touring too has like helped us a lot with every other aspect, because it helps you as a group, you know, get better at being a group, you know, and that translates to being in a studio or translates to whatever else, you know. And so, and the other thing too is it's easy to talk about like the discomfort of not having a house to go back to, which is what people usually land on with touring, but there's also a lot of it that's just really fucking fun. You're just mm-hmm. hanging out with friends, especially when it's like our kind of band, like we're just really good friends, you know? Mm. And so it's great to be driving for 11 hours, you
totally,
know?
Totally.
Like, yeah. So I think it's a mix of both, because there is some ambition mixed in and a little bit of like, if we were at a level where we had capped out our capacity without changing the structure of what we're doing, I don't know if we would push to do a new structure that would allow us to get even bigger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that we're sort of fortunate to be able to still maintain a little bit of growth without really changing the purpose or the way that things get done. You know, so for us, it's like we're still in that happy spot, you know, where we get to just put a tour together and get in a van and play some shows, play with a bunch of bands that we think are cool, that we emailed their random email address from their band camp, you know, like it's still a fun scavenger hunt in
yeah,
a way,
totally.
You know.
And do you feel like you're getting the audiences that you want, or at least like the people that are showing up are the people that you want to be playing to?
We've definitely done a lot better in the last couple of years of that, of like making sure that we're not playing a ghost orchard. You know, but it's...
Do ghosts grow on trees?
Yeah, they do on this tour. Yeah, I think more, better and better, but I don't think that's another moving target thing where it's like, hopefully this record that we're putting out now touches on some things that are different from the last one, and hopefully the next one touches on some things that are different from each of those. And so I think it'll always change a little bit, you know, but... compared to like when we were first going out, it's so much better now. Like it's so mm-hmm. clear that there's just people who understand where we're coming from and they're appreciating it, and that's fucking cool, you know. Tour is nice because it has a beginning and an end, and most other things don't, you know.
Yeah, totally.
Like it's cool to just have this moment that you build that's however long, you know. Helps yeah. you enjoy it in the way that maybe you should enjoy
holy crap.
Your normal days.
Would we,
yeah. you know?
Would we all be happier if we knew when we were going to die?
Totally.
Yeah, absolutely.
And actually, I can secure yours if for a fee.
We just created a new job.
Yeah.
Hitman.
When do you want to go?
When do you want to go?
Yeah. That was one of the written wrong about the band.
Oh, there you
is,
go.
During all of the Mayor stuff, every single. There was like a Consequences sound thing and Vice and Noisy and all that stuff. Everybody called our band a punk band because mm-hmm. I was wearing a leather jacket and a mohawk. If you listen to our records, it's not punk music.
No.
You know? So a press photo matters.
Yes.
So make sure you're...
Make sure you get that mohawk in front
sure
of a...
Make sure you got that horse and you got the
sunglasses.
And you got a couple dudes in sleeping bags. Hit all the demos.
Yeah, like, fuck you. A fuck you on a cast.
Yeah, fuck you on the cast.
I feel like this would be all of those images would be a great collage for
really
for
would.
Like an upcoming
yeah.
and album.
Totally. Oh, that's another thing that we're doing. Speaking of merchandising, we were talking about merch a little before we started, but that's
yeah.
something we're doing. We're excited about. We've been doing these music videos since the last record, so since 2015, we've been doing our own music videos with just like our phones, and I learned how to use Final Cut Pro for them and stuff. Anyway, they're all connected, and we have five of them now. And so we're restitching them together into this like 15 minute long short film because the storyline connects through all of them. Mm-hmm. And then I just got a shit ton of DVDs from Scrap for like $2. And so we're going to have DVDs at the merch table just in time for DVDs to be popular.
That's tight. Awesome.
That's so I think great. We're going to call the saga and the Philosopher's Stoned.
Feel pretty good about that.
And the Temple of Baraji.
Yeah, the Temple of Baraji. That's good.
Man, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. They're all filmed in my house, which is called the Castle of Jank. But the Temple of Baraji might be the next.
Can I write the comic? The fantasy
please.
Comic that is called Temple of Baraji?
Yeah, totally. I live with a comic book artist, and her and I were talking about doing some different.
That's amazing.
You and her and I should get together. She was like, I want you to write some stuff about like crazy weird internet shit and do some comics.
Every room in the Temple of Baraji, you can only have sex in it if two people are sleeping on the floor next to your bed and the sex is a threesome.
Yeah. Two men sleep, three people fuck.
That's what it says in the tagline. And the Temple of Baraji.
Two men sleep, three people fuck.
There'd be so many weird ways that people would take that.
Yeah. It makes no sense.
In parentheses, but you got to use our sleeping bags.
Yeah.
And then sub parentheses, they're not really sleeping.
They're not really sleeping bags.
They're hiding bags.
They're snuggies.
They're pretending bags.
Pretending bags.
Oh my God.
Well, I don't really know how to wrap this thing up right now, but it's been a pleasure.
Let's end on the chant.
Two men sleep, three men fuck.
I love how it's three. Now it's three men that fuck too.
Yeah.
Two men sleep, three men fuck.
Also, when we started, I just started chanting two men enter.
We got to work on our chant.
Yeah. Baraji.
It is that in my mind.
Baraji.
Broji.
Broji. Yeah, that's what Twitter's going to think.
Well, there you have it, folks. This was our second episode of Tour Punisher with Bim Ditson of And. You can look up their music at andandandmusic.com. Tour Punisher was produced by the two of us, Noah Dunham and Ryan Soli, and also Ray Rude. Sound design was also by Ray Rude, as well as sound engineering and original music. Big thanks to our guest, Bim Ditson. We record from sunny Portland, Oregon at Open Signal Community Media. Just a word of warning for anyone that's in a band. Your parents are disappointed.
Your parents are disappointed.